This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Invest Talk. Welcome to our daily show. We do this Monday through Friday, 4 to 5, every day, live. And we're here to help you if we can. We all need some balance and some perspective, and that's hopefully what this show does for you. Without a sense of those things, you know, because you can look at today, what happened today and what happened yesterday, and not really understand the context over length of time. So hopefully we won't get you bogged down on the day-to-day details. I'm going to provide you day-to-day details, but I don't want you to, you know, I want you also to take a look at a longer perspective. Today, there's more to preparing for retirement than simply saving and investing your money. There's budgeting. I talk to many people approaching or in retirement, and you need to think about what you're spending and what income is coming in. So when you look ahead to those years, and you know, for many of us, we're in it or not too far from it, or even your young people, how do you generate monthly income? How are you going to generate it once you're not working? Now, maybe you'll work until you die. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But most people won't or can't. So how are you going to generate monthly income, and how much is it going to be? Besides Social Security, and I assure you Social Security will be there for everybody. It's whether or not when you'll be able to take it. They're going to push back the age. I can't see how they can't keep doing that. And then you got to consider taxes and everything else in your, we'll talk about it, but we really have to think about planning for that. You got to think about your estate, you got to think about your loved ones, you got to think about safeguarding everything, health issues, you're going to have costs in retirement as you get older, things happen and you need to take care of things. You got to have all that. And if it's really confusing for you, hire somebody, hire an attorney, hire somebody to help you organize your family financial records. Now, we talk about risk also. I talk about it all the time. Mostly it's about risk when you're buying a particular stock or mutual fund, ETF, and a risk of a portfolio. But there's another kind of risk that's out there. It's right in the risk from standpoint of longevity. Will you outlive your money? That's a risk. You got to figure out how long will you have money. I was talking to a client today. You know, he's worried that, you know, he might outlive his money because he's spending some. And, you know, it's a legitimate concern. You really need to look at that. So don't just look at the risk of what you own. Look at the risk of whether or not you have enough money and you will run out. So these are some of the issues we tackle on our wealth workshop webinars that we do. And we'll probably have one coming up in January or early February. If you weren't able to look, you know, come to the last one or the one before, maybe you'll be able to come to the next one. And you know, we do webinars all the time. And if you become an InvestTalk Insider, you can see some of the webinars that we've done. You can sign up for free whenever you want to at InvestTalk.com. Now, what other questions are on your mind? Do you have some? Why not ask a strategy question? Do you have a plan? I mean, hopefully you do. You're not chasing prices, are you? Or chasing dividends. A lot of people are doing that. And not paying attention to the risk you're taking. Don't. You got to stay focused. 888-99-CHART is our number. It's the quickest way to reach us. So let's go ahead and take a question. This one came in after the program yesterday. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. Thank you for a very interesting show. I listen to you every day. My stop-loss orders pretty much sold me out of most of my positions over the last few days due to the broad effect on the market from declining oil prices. Very disappointing. I think I'm going to step aside on long-term purchases now. So now I'm looking at trying to take advantage of the declining, continuing decline. I have three questions. What do you think of purchasing airline stocks or an airline ETF, again, as a trade? If you think this is a good trade, can you mention a good airline ETF? And last question, what other industries do you think might benefit dramatically from the decline in oil prices? Thank you very much. Great show again. Bye.
Now, I don't know of an ETF, airline ETF. I really don't have one, and so I can't really give you one of those. I don't even know if ones exist. I've never seen one. It wouldn't surprise me if one exists, but I know there's a transportation ETFs. IYT is the symbol. IYT is a transportation ETF. You know, an IYT would, of course, include airlines. It's the... It follows, it's a exchange traded fund for following the Dow Jones Transportation Average Index. So you can just imagine all the different transportation stocks in there. And you're mentioning declining oil and what other industries will it affect or benefit. I'm thinking the chemical industry because, you know, a lot of, I'm also thinking plastic industry because they use a lot of oil. Any industry that uses oil as its input product should benefit. Now, of course, you realize you're not the only one thinking about that or considering that. And I do believe oil is getting very close. Did you see what the price was? It was under $60 a barrel today. Under $60 a barrel. It's getting really stretched on the downside. And I do think there's opportunities being developed here. So, you know, you want to start thinking about those opportunities out there. Now, oil stocks have been hit. Wouldn't that be logical? And I've had many people ask me and said, okay, is it time to buy? Time to buy? And here, you know, oil's still going down. And I keep telling you, let's wait till it starts trading sideways. Oil prices trade sideways and wait till they start peaking back up before you decide to buy an oil stock. There's no big rush here. Everybody thinks they're going to miss some big opportunity. No, there's not a big rush, especially in the big oil, ExxonMobil, Chevron, you know, the big guys. Take your time. You know, wait to see where it's going. And, you know, some of these big guys are getting awful inexpensive based on their projected earnings, even when their projected earnings are going down for 2015. But be patient. You know, the dividend yields in some of these oil plays are looking really attractive. Now, when I say oil plays, I'm not talking about fracking company. I'm talking more like big oil. Why am I shying away from the fracking companies? Because a lot of them took on a lot of debt, and a lot of that is junk bond debt. And as low oil prices, you think this isn't done on purpose? You don't remember a month or so, maybe 3 weeks ago, OPEC met and they said they're going to keep production levels the same, and that's just whatever the price goes, it goes. They're trying to drive out producers for next year. And I guarantee you, all those peripheral producers that are barely making money, they're going to be out of business. Or the big guys are going to buy the little guys. And they're meaning the OPEC, want to drive up prices of oil. They want it to go up, but you know, with our continuing producing oil, there's a glut. Well, there has been for a while. The price is now just catching up. Oh yeah. Oh gee, there's a glut. But there's been a glut for over a year, 2 years. We have a lot more than we need. A lot more. And we have more in the ground than we can get. We have our reserves. The amount that you can pull out of the ground have been only increases and increasing over the last several years. And we're like at 30-year highs in the oil reserves in the ground. We have plenty of oil. Remember how when it was $145 and everybody was saying, well, we need to drill, we need to drill. And other people are saying, we can't become oil independent anyway, so we have to deal with, what we got to do is use less of it. Well, we are using less of it, and we are drilling. So we can become oil independent. Kind of interesting dynamics. But In answer to your question, I kind of think utilities might benefit, the ones who are using oil, gasoline, or maybe natural gas to input prices might go down. But see, a lot of those are long-term contracts, so may not be immediately effective. You know, transportation stocks, you know, trucking companies. You mentioned airlines. I don't particularly care for airlines, but you know, that all can work. To understand whether a self-directed IRA is right for you, you must first understand what it is. A self-directed IRA is not an IRA that you think of, a regular IRA. Self-directed IRA has different rules, but is it right for you? And the rules can be kind of complex. That's going to be one of our talking points today. We had one major economic statistic out today, and actually that's the one major economic statistic out this week. There are others, but this one is the one that's, and that's retail sales. I mentioned this yesterday, so I want to make sure we talk about what it was today. And that's why the market moved so much. Don't be too comfortable about lower oil gas prices, everybody. Don't be too comfortable about that. I don't know how long they'll last, but you know, we need to talk about what the government's going to do about that. How to create a financial plan for retirement. I got four things you need to do. How to create one. It's not rocket science, but you do have to pay attention. And here is a little red warning flag in an article that Justin put on my desk this morning. And it's the rise of the rich man subprime. Securities-based lending. Have you ever heard of securities-based lending? Or it's also known as non-purpose lending. That's currently the hottest thing on Wall Street, getting around the Dodd-Graham Act that's going to be passed. I mean, this is kind of a little loophole. And should we be worried about it? Well, this article, when you read it, it tries to make you feel more worried about it than you really should. But there's a couple of holes in the article. Not that there's anything wrong with the article, but they left some things out so that it's very difficult to analyze how bad this problem could be. But we're going to talk about the problem, what it is. What is securities-based lending? And why? Remember I wanted to talk about the U.S. debt, why no one's talking about it? It's not a big deal anymore. I want to get to that today. We didn't get to it the other day, but I do want to do it now.
Did you get your dose of Steve today? Steve Peasley's market commentary can't always put things right in the market, but it can put things into perspective. There for you every morning on InvestTalk.com.
Let's go to Bob and San Ramon. How are you doing, Bob, there in San Ramon, Bob?
Steve, I had a question about insider trading. Are there services that track insider trading and produce reports?
Yes, there are, because they have to report. Insiders have to report their buys and sells. They have to report their options. They have to report everything. And Morningstar, Zacks, Daily Graphs, many, many, many people report on the insider trading activity. You can find that information in a lot of places on the internet. Yahoo Finance is good. MSM Money is good. MarketWatch.com is good. Those all report those insider trading activities. Problem is, you have to find it. It's not like, oh, here it is.
That's my problem. I see it on Yahoo, but I want a report where you don't have to go into each stock.
Yeah, well then, see, when you're talking about reports, then you're talking about people like me who buy those kinds of information. You had to buy it.
Oh, okay.
And, if you're trying to trade your own, is it worth to buy that information? You know, inside trading is not a simple thing. People think, they're selling. They're buying. Well, a lot of times when they sell, they're selling because their net worth is too much tied up in one stock. Bill Gates sold millions and millions of dollars worth of his shares, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have faith in his company. He's just trying to diversify. So it's a very difficult report. I think what's more important is insider buying rather than insider selling.
That's what I would think, too.
Yeah, because they have to use real money to buy, real money. When they sell, it could be just options they're exercising that they got for free or a very low price. So selling may not tell you the story. But when an insider is buying heavily, the CEO and his high cohorts, that means they're having a lot of faith in their company. That means they may know something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, somebody always knows something before you and I do. They always do.
Yes, I think that's true.
Bob, appreciate the call.
Sure. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, I want to talk about the one major economic statistic that came out, and why I want to talk about it, because it was a big surprise. It was a surprise. And I mentioned this yesterday, retail sales, yesterday. Remember I said that what they were expecting? And I mentioned gasoline, and the price of that has fallen sharply, and that maybe retail sales, that's why they're expecting it not to be as good as they thought it might be. Well, we're going to talk about the numbers. How much of a company stock is owned by insiders? How much does that factor into your stock value? Should you worry about that? Generally speaking, I will say you should, but let's talk about it. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. This is Invest Talk. You can call me right now. 888-99-CHART is the number. 888-992-4278.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics, so please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Jason, San Diego, how you doing?
Good. My question is, why do mutual funds close to new investors? And if I start investing in a fund and then it closes, can I keep adding to my position in that?
Very, very good question, Jason. Mutual funds close for one reason, and that reason is they're getting too much money for what they invest in. They cannot put that money to work fast enough, or they have too much money, period. One of those two reasons. If you already own shares, Jason, almost all of them that I've ever seen will allow you to buy additional shares. They just closed the door. The mutual fund closes to new investors. If you sold all your shares, Jason, all of them, they would not let you back in.
Okay.
Now, sometimes they will reopen because sometimes they get the money too fast and they can't put it to work, and therefore they're going to have bad performance and they don't want that. So sometimes they reopen when they have, 6 months later or so, when they've been able to put that money to work, and they'll reopen. Jason, when a mutual fund closes, that is a good thing. That tells you that those managers are not just looking at greed. Remember, when they close their funds, they close the fund, that means they're not going to take any more money. That means they earn their money as a percentage of the money they manage. So it's a good thing. If this mutual fund concentrates on small cap stocks, Jason, they should close once they get about $300 to $500 million, maybe $1 billion in the mint. They should close because small cap stocks are not very liquid. There's not very many of them. Does that help you?
Yeah, that helps a lot. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the call. Marie in Snow Valley. How you doing, Marie?
My husband and I are 88 years old, and my daughter is helping us decide what to do with an IRA. We have about $200,000, and it was called from a bond, and it's needs to be invested.
Okay.
Are we too old to think of a balanced fund or a bond fund, or should we just go to cash?
Well, you're 88. God bless you for that. How's your health?
Fine.
Are you financially set? Do you have any worries about money other than this money?
We just need this money to pay insurance policies.
Normally, at 88 years old, I would say don't put it in anything long term.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have your health, Marie, go take a trip around the world. I'm thinking if you're financially set, you saved and worked and scrimped for this money all your life, and it's time to enjoy it.
Well,
I don't know. If it was me, and I'm 88 years old, and I have lots of money, and this is money I just need for insurance payments, and how much is that a year, by the way?
Well, the one we have to pay is $8,000.
Eight? Mm-hmm. So at $8,000 a year, if you made absolutely nothing on this $200,000, you got 20-plus years. Of money. And God bless you, I don't think you're going to make it up to 108.
No, I don't think so either.
Okay. What you could do, do you have one child, daughter?
I have two daughters.
have you been giving them gifts of up to $10,000 a year to transfer the wealth without a tax consequence?
Well, our other money's all in property, and we can't because of capital gains yet.
That's right. You got issues there. I would keep it liquid. I do a CD or treasury. I do ladder treasuries or CDs. I would not get involved with the stock market at 88.
Okay.
And that's just me. If you have plenty of money, sure. If it's fun and something you want to do, sure. But otherwise, I'd probably keep it very safe, Marie.
I just want to be sure I make that $8,000.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call.
Answering your questions is my number one job on this show. You can reach me right now on the hotline during the 4 to 5 hour Pacific time while we're live. Or you can schedule any time you want. Give a call. 888-99-CHART. Andrew checked in from Los Angeles.
Yes, good morning. I am currently working a job, and I am about to leave this position. I do have a 401k. My question is, after I leave this position, could I possibly roll that 401k over to a CD or a other account besides a Roth or IRA? My basic question is, I might need to use this money. I'm trying to find a way to transfer it over to a CD, pay less taxes if it's possible, or if not, I would have to probably roll it into an IRA account. I'm looking for some advice. Thank you so much, and you have a good day.
Okay, when you have a 401k and you leave the employer, your options are you can roll it into roll it into an IRA, a rollover IRA. If you put it in a normal savings account or a CD, and that is a withdrawal from the retirement account, you're going to be taxed on it as income, and you're going to be penalized 10%. So the only thing you can do is you can leave it where it is, or you can roll it over into an IRA. Inside that IRA, of course, you can buy whatever you want. You can buy CDs. See, that's just an asset inside the IRA. But the basket is the IRA, and if you spend it, take it, put it in some other non-retirement account, you're going to have to add that to your adjusted gross income for the year that you take it out of the IRA or 401k, and you're going to pay taxes on it. And if you're young, in other words, you're not at retirement age, you're going to have to pay a 10% penalty. There is no way around that. Now, I say that with all the confidence, but there is a little way around that. That way around it has something to do with a distress situation that you have. You need to take the money because of medical reasons. There's certain things you can do, but you got to check with an accountant. Make sure you qualify for that. And most things don't qualify for it. So don't just because you need it, because you need some money. You're going to have to pay taxes and a penalty. So my advice is not to do it. Are you ready to buy a house? Do you know that 1 in 4 homeowners suffer from buyer's remorse? Did you know that? 25% of people who buy a house and regret it. That's going to be our topic today on Invest Talk and our personal, Invest Talk Personal, coming up next in the next half hour. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasel. I'm here to answer your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about here on Invest Talk? It's all about what is interesting to you. If you don't call with your questions, I have lots of stuff I want to talk about. You know, I'm a constant reader. I'm a big reader of everything. Today I was reading an article about the self-directed IRA. And I mentioned it yesterday on the show, though. We were going to talk about it. I read up on it today. And I know a couple of people who have these. This is not something, it's not your regular IRA. And what are there's pros and cons for it. The main difference is it's not like at a normal buying stocks and bonds and ETFs, you know. What you do this for is you are directing your assets. You got to find a custodian. There's certain documents that you have to produce every year, and there's got to be certain agreements And you got to be really careful to make sure that you're doing following the rules. You can't do any self-dealing. What do I mean? See, in a self-directed IRA, you can buy real estate. You can buy gold, physical gold. You can buy paintings. You can do flipping of homes with that money. But you can't do any self-dealing, meaning you can't do deals with your relatives and those things and so forth. There's certain things you cannot do, and there's certain clear, concise paperwork that is required. And most people, that's where they don't want to even consider it. These self-directed IRAs have been around forever. Don't think they're new. But usually you have to have a CPA. There's got to be an arm's length agreement, between the custodian. You've got to find a custodian, and you're not going to find that many custodians out there. And you certainly don't want a small fly-by-night custodian. You want a big one, but they don't like doing these things because of the paperwork involved. So is it right for you? Well, I mean, it could be. Not for the average guy, but the guy who, a person, woman, man, couple who want to really get involved with alternative kinds of investments, maybe want to buy a partial ownership of a restaurant, which I would never recommend, by the way, never. But, that's the kind of things that you could do with a self-directed IRA. So the bottom line is how much freedom do you want in your investments? Is not the stock market enough? Stock, bonds, REITs, all those commodities that you can buy publicly traded, is that not enough? Is there something else you want to do outside that? And if you say yes, then maybe they're for you. Just be very, very careful with them. Okay? Don't hesitate to call us with your question anytime you want. You can share your investing experience if you like. Tell us about the mix in your portfolio. The number to call, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can reach us anytime. George, Aliso Viejo. How are you doing, George?
I'm doing fine today. I'm in the dilemma of the fear and greed again.
Aren't we all?
I'm looking at retirement in 6 to 9 months.
Oh, good for you.
Now, in my 401k, I don't have very many choices. I have been in a large cap fund, mm-hmm. about a third of that there, and a third in a small cap, and then a third in an international fund.
Okay.
Now, at this point, there's no cost for me or tax implications or anything. Should I start drawing some of that out of there and getting in a cash position? Because I'm going to have to change it anyway.
Yes, you should, George, and I'm saying that because of your pending retirement.
Right.
It's time for you. Now, everybody, listen up. It's time for George to get a little bit more conservative, and I would start taking some money, and if it was me, I'd take some from each one of those three categories. I wouldn't just dump one of them.
I was thinking of just maybe sell half in each one and just go to a cash position.
I would do that. That would produce now is you got 50% in cash and 50% in the market, and are you about 60-something?
62.
Yeah, and see, at 62, that would be a much safer and a more of a proper balance, unless you have lots of other assets that's not in your 401k that's conservative.
Well, the ones I have outside of that are not conservative, although I'm shifting it over a little bit.
Okay.
But that money was my growth money that I don't need for income, but I want to keep and grow and have it available in 5 or 6 years.
Okay, and I think that's perfect. So this money, I think you need to get more conservative. I agree with you 100%. The other money that you don't need for 5 or 6 years can stay aggressive, but start getting conservative with this retirement IRA 401k money.
All right, thanks a lot.
Appreciate the call.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Don't be too comfortable about lower gas prices, by the way. Why am I saying that? Well, you do know how much your tax dollars go for a gallon of gas? California is one of the most expensive. Okay, it's like 40 cents a gallon or something. It's 22% of the cost of the gasoline is for taxes. California, that's state, federal, excise, sales tax. You're taxed up the yin yang when you pump gas into your car. What's going to happen, and what's already happening in a number of states, and I'm sure it's going to happen here in California, is because your gallon of gas is now getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So they're going to try to pass taxes, increase taxes, so you won't even notice it. And you're thinking, those darn oil companies, I can tell you that the politicians are going to try to increase taxes so they can take some money off from out of your pocket. Because the price of gas is already going down. Then when it goes back up, of course, they're not going to give it back to you. Of course not. So then they just increase the tax and you felt okay about it because you didn't get up in arms because it wasn't $5 a gallon and they were adding another 10 cents tax per gallon. It was $3 a gallon and you feel okay about it. You don't get up in arms. People won't. So don't get too comfortable. Gasoline prices will go back up. They are going to go back up. It wouldn't be surprised to go back up next year. Wouldn't surprise me at all. But they will not stay down low. Everybody, I've been around for umpteen years. I've seen this cycle before. It's a long cycle. I don't think prices are going to spike up, but they're going to go back up. It's just when and how much and how fast. I wouldn't be surprised if oil prices go up to back to $80 a barrel next year. Wouldn't surprise me. It also would not surprise me. It stays fairly low for a while. So will it go back up to 100? Not anytime soon. When I say that, next year, maybe not the year after. Something has to happen. Something dramatic has to happen to do that. But just don't get comfortable with these low oil prices. They're not going to stay there. Either taxes are going to go up or oil prices will go back up. And so gasoline. Be prepared. Be prepared. 888-99-CHART. That's our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Sean in San Diego. How you doing, Sean?
Hi, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, I had a question. Currently, I'm an MBA student, and I'm thinking about writing my thesis over companies that utilize value-based management, more specifically, economic value-added management techniques.
Okay.
In terms of investing, should one look at specifically at companies that use the model in their management?
Well, when you look at a company, you look at all the ratios, okay? And that's going to give you the basis of whether the company is making money and how much money is it making on its assets.
Okay.
Return on assets, return on equity. The ratios between sales growth, earnings growth, and the price of the stock, all those things, if you're looking at the stock price in relationship to the company itself, that's probably different than what you're going to do your thesis on.
Okay.
But you're doing your thesis on is the fundamental management of the company and how good it is.
Yes, and it'd be more of the long-term benefit. I really don't see a short-term benefit as far as the stock price because it already takes in consideration the right. Cash flows.
Yes, right. The stock price will reflect all those ratios that you'll be looking at. You want to look at the efficiency of the company, its efficient use of its assets or its cash or its equity.
Okay, great.
Okay, so you want to look at return on assets and return on equity. Those are the two things you want to look for as far as good management of that company.
Okay, so that would be the term, the accounting profit, not specifically the economic profit of
that's
the company.
Right.
Great.
Sean, appreciate the call.
Thank
good
you,
luck
sir.
With that.
I do appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Congratulations on the MBA. Hope it works out for you and you make tons of money in the future.
Thank you. I'm very excited. Thank you.
Thank you.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Are you really ready to buy a house? Interest rates are still very attractive. They come way down, so you're thinking it's now or never that maybe you should buy. But maybe you should answer a few questions before you do. Can you answer yes to these questions? Do you have a strong credit score? Because you want to get the lowest rate. Do you have a strong credit score? Have you looked at it? Now, mortgage is one of the biggest financial obligations you're going to take on in your life. So can you handle that burden, paying the interest rates? And why pay a higher rate because you have a bad credit score? You need to work on that. So the lower your credit score, the higher your interest rate is likely to be. You want a really good credit score. So maybe you should put some time and energy to make sure that that happens before you buy the house. Another question. Will you still be able to add regularly to your savings after you buy this house? You got retirement down the road. You don't want to put every dime necessarily into the house. You still want to be able to put some money away. And have you really added up all the costs of owning the house? I think a lot of people, first-time buyers especially, are kind of shocked at how much it really costs to maintain this house. Besides just principal and interest on the mortgage, you got taxes, and usually that many times that's added in, utilities, repairs, maintenance expense. It can quickly be expensive. Something goes wrong, oh, the water heater blew. Well, you got to, you know, if you're a renter, you don't care. The owner pays for that. But if you own it, yeah, it's costs. How about home heating oil? If you're in California, you know what I'm talking about. It can get pretty expensive. And, you know, so there's certain costs that you really got to be prepared for. Remember, as I quoted it earlier in the show, one out of four people have buyer's remorse buying a house. Now, after saying that, I do think it's a great asset. I do. Home ownership is a great asset. And in California, that asset generally goes up in value over time. I don't know about other parts of the country. I know there's, you know, I know real estate in different parts of the country acts differently. So you got to be, you know, location, location, location is important. That's InvestTalk Personal. If there's an investment topic you might want to talk about or want more information on, you got to let me know. Just go to InvestTalk.com, click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, send us an email. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and leave a message.
InvestTalk is your one-hour appointment with the money managers to help you do your retirement right. If you have questions about your 401k, your IRA, or are mutual funds best for you, or should you be thinking about investing in individual stocks, what's the difference between a broker and a portfolio manager? This is your hour. Call in with your question, 888-99-CHART, and get in on InvestTalk.
Now, why is no one talking about U.S. debt being a problem anymore? It's just not, they don't care. No one cares about it. And the reason being, and this is a good lesson to learn when we talk about debt, sovereign debt, because it's always a percentage of the GDP that's important. How much debt compared to your GDP do you have? Now, the largest debt to GDP percentage we had was during World War II, in the early 1940s. It was about 30%, got up to 30%. What do you think it is today? The federal deficit is now 2.9% of our GDP. Now, why? Think of it this way. You, an individual, have so much worth and so much income coming in, right? Now, you want to buy a house, just what we're talking about. How much of that debt on that house, how much are you going to borrow to pay for that debt in comparison to your wealth, your income, and your net asset value of your wealth? And that's what they're doing, 2.9% of GDP. What's the wealth of the United States, and how much of that wealth is debt? 2.9% is pretty low. Okay, that's pretty low. Although federal debt held by public is going to reach 74% of our GDP this year, but it's the deficit is 2.9%. You have to understand the difference between debt and deficit. Deficit is referring to, well, how much money is our country making a year? Well, I think it's right around $14, $15 trillion a year. something like that. And what is the debt? How much debt do we have compared to our GDP? So how much debt in a mortgage do you have compared to your GDP? See, it's like that. Can you support it? Basically, it's all about, can I support this debt? Debt in itself is not a good thing, personally. That's what I think. But can you handle it? We're moving into the last segment of the hour. We've got about 10 minutes. Time to give us a call. 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Let's catch up on our 24-hour listener line calls. Here's a question that came in between programs at that number. Howard called.
Thanks for taking my call. I have two kids in college, one a freshman, one a junior, and I'm struggling through supporting them doing so. Is it too late for me to take advantage of 529 or Coverdell program here in California? Thank you.
Yes. See, the benefit of those programs are the growth that is not taxed. And if your kids are already in a college, how you only have one, two, three years to grow it, it's way too late. So, yeah, you're wasting your time, in my opinion, to try to do that. It's just not, you don't have the time. See, if you do it when they're done, the younger they are, the better. Because if you have 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you have to grow the assets. All that growth never has to be, you don't have to pay tax on it. You don't have to pay taxes on it. But if your kids are already in college, you don't have time to grow. Time is key. Money grows over time. Long time, not just a year. Too many people look at 1 year and say, well, gee, I haven't done very well in my portfolio, and think that that means, okay, I'm doing a terrible thing. No, you're not. It takes time. You're never going to be right every day, every week, every month, every year. You're not going to be right. The investment business... Look at the hedge funds this year. Massive amount of losses in hedge funds this year. They are desperate to get the market to move up by the last month because they've been trying to push money into the market to try to keep it because they guessed wrong. Think about the massive positions they had in junk bonds that have just been crushed. I'm talking about hedge funds. And I keep reading every day how much losses they have. And that's the nature of hedge funds, by the way, just so you know. It's 1 year they'll do great, just super fantastic. Next year they'll get crushed because they're taking heavy leveraged positions. And if they go against them, they're in trouble. So, but for you in a 529 or a Coverdell and your kids are already in college, too late. I wouldn't worry about it. Just do what you have to do. You know, and don't bury yourself in debt for your children because of college. Because you have, this is how I look at it. I know if you have college-bound children or in college, you're now in your 50s, probably, and retirement is staring at you in the face down the road here, not too far. So be very, very careful. How to create a financial plan for retirement. It's not rocket science. It's pretty simple, just hard to implement. Simple in concept, hard to implement. And here's four things you should start with. First, look at your expenses. What is your expenses now, and what are they going to be in retirement? And I'm not just talking about, some people just say, well, my expenses are pretty low. I just have basically gas and food and some utilities. No, you don't. That's not your monthly expenses. That's not your expenses over a year. Have you considered other things like insurance that comes around once in a while, or property tax? It's going to come around once a year. And then you got your income tax that you're going to have to pay in retirement based on whatever income tax. You're going to take a vacation, aren't you? Sometime? Go somewhere? And how about entertainment? How about charitable giving? All those costs. You got to figure them all out. You're going to say, well, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. Well, but you've got to figure out how much that you are going to do. Once you've done that, looking at the expense side of your personal ledger sheet, then review your income. Start with Social Security. You're going to get Social Security no matter what. How much? They'll tell you. They'll tell you now based on what you're doing, and then 5 years from now or 7 years, whatever your retirement age. So look at Social Security. Start there. You're going to get a pension. You're going to have any rental income. You're going to have any income. Leave out your expenses, your investments for the time being. Figure out what income is going to come in retirement. Okay, then figure out what the difference is. What's the difference between those expenses and income? Then you look at your investments and say, well, how much can I safely take out? And I just in round numbers, figure 4%. And then go from there. Okay? That's how you create a plan. You start there. Now, before we close for the hour, be sure to sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. You can play back our retirement workshop webinar, which has a lot of good information about the thing we just talked about. You can sign up at InvestTalk.com for free. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.